Let me introduce you to Joel. If you don't know him, Joel Glickman is a clinical associate professor of medicine at the University of Pennsylvania College of Medicine. He's a private practice nephrologist. He has spoken widely on a number of topics, anemia and iron, for example, and he was at the spring meeting in Washington. He is an excellent speaker. And he's going to be talking about morbidity of anemia in patients with chronic kidney disease. CKD, Joel.
Oh, good afternoon. I think it's safe to say that at a 20% annual mortality, we have a lot to learn about the care of dialysis patients. And I think with the results of the recent ADAMEX study and HEMO study, we've learned that increasing dialysis dose doesn't necessarily improve outcomes. So what's the answer? Well, we know that our patients aren't dying of uremia. Our patients are dying of cardiovascular death. And we know that that cardiovascular death, that cardiovascular risk, doesn't start when the patient enters the dialysis unit. They're sick by the time we get to see them. They've had hypertension for a long time, they have high lipid levels, they have anemia, et cetera. And if we're going to have any impact on improving outcomes in our dialysis patients by improving cardiovascular outcomes, then we have to start treating them in the pre-dialysis period. Because of that, Kay Doki came up with this great classification of kidney disease, showing that it is a continuum. It starts when the GFR is dropped below 90 and continues on. And the reason I like this classification is you can see from this slide that the complications of chronic kidney disease increase as we go from stage 1, 2, 3, 4, and following 5. So hypertension goes up, hyperparathyroidism goes up, hyperphosphatemia goes up. But what we're going to focus on today is the anemia. We can see that stage 1 kidney disease, very few people are anemic. By stage 3 disease, about maybe 15%. But stage 4 disease, GFR is in the 15 to 29 range, somewhere around 50% or so of patients have some degree of anemia. And I also want to introduce you, if you don't already know about it, is the concept of the cardiorenal anemia syndrome. We know that patients who have cardiac disease are at risk for developing renal disease. But we also recently learned that having renal disease is an independent risk factor for developing cardiac disease, just as hypertension, hyperlipidemia, smoking, and diabetes. People who have cardiac disease are at risk for developing anemia. And it turns out that cardiac patients who are anemic have worse outcomes, and therapy of the anemia improves their outcomes. But what we're going to focus on is the last line of the triangle, the relationship between chronic kidney disease and anemia. We know patients with chronic kidney disease develop anemia, but what exactly is the consequence of that anemia, and what can we do about it? So the talk is set up into two parts. First, we're going to talk about anemia and chronic kidney disease, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the management of the anemia and chronic kidney disease, specifically the role of iron therapy. So let's start with anemia and chronic kidney disease. The questions I'd like to answer are, does anemia cause progression of chronic kidney disease? Does treatment of the anemia preserve renal function? And finally, does that treatment actually help patient outcomes? Well, this data comes from the RENAL study. The RENAL study was a study done in type 2 diabetics who had renal disease. And the purpose of the study was to look at the effect of the ARB losartan on preventing progression of kidney disease. And as you know, they showed that blood pressure control with losartan decreased progression of chronic kidney disease. But a multivariate analysis of the study showed that anemia was an independent risk factor for worsening renal function. And as you can see from this graph, as the hemoglobin level decreased from 13.8 down to 11.2, the risk of doubling serum creatinine level or progressing to end-stage renal disease increased. Represented slightly differently, if your hemoglobin level was greater than 13.8, you had a 20% likelihood of doubling your creatinine level or progressing to end-stage renal disease. However, if your hemoglobin was less than 11.2, you had a 60% likelihood of progressing end-stage renal disease with doubling your creatinine level. Well, that's a little curious. Why should anemia worsen kidney function? I'd like to show you at least some theoretical considerations. We focus a lot of our attention on the glomerulus. As you know, we talk about glomerular hypertension as a cause of progressive glomerulosclerosis, the effect of proteinuria on progressive glomerular disease, but we tend to ignore the other parts of the nephron, specifically the tubules and the interstitium. And we know that as the kidney is diseased, we get tubular atrophy and progressive scarring in the interstitium, and it turns out that those two findings on kidney biopsy are more predictive of renal outcome than what the glomerulus looks like. So the tubules and the interstitium are a very important part of the progressive kidney disease, at least on a pathological basis. Well, how did the tubules and interstitium get diseased? As you remember from renal physiology, the tubules take a dive down from the cortex to the medulla, and the oxygen tension level in the medulla is very low. Since it's very low, those tubules are very susceptible to hypoxic injury. And that hypoxic injury is mediated by reactive oxygen species. These oxygen species, the reactive oxygen species, cause further inflammation and scarring. Well, how does therapy with EPO, or improvement of hemoglobin level, deal with oxidative stress and reactive oxygen species? Well, for one, if we increase the hemoglobin level, we'll increase oxygen delivery to the tissues, and we have less risk of hypoxic injury. Second of all, it turns out that red blood cells are great antioxidants. They do a wonderful job at dealing with reactive oxygen species, and therefore they can decrease the oxidative stress in the kidney. Finally, what I think is the most interesting concept is this concept of apoptosis. Now, like it or not, every cell in our body has been programmed to die one day. And that programmed death is called apoptosis. It turns out that many cells in our body, neuronal cells, kidney cells, red blood cells, have erythropoietin receptors on them. And when erythropoietin binds to those receptors, it prevents cell apoptosis. And recently there was a study, a basic science study, where they gave, in an in vitro setting, erythropoietin and caused an ischemic injury to these renal cells, and apoptosis was decreased. So I think there is emerging literature that the effect of erythropoietin goes beyond increasing red blood cells. It may prevent programmed cell death of renal cells. Well, anemia is a risk factor for progression of end-stage renal disease. It may make sense on a basic science level. That's nice and dandy. Does it do anything in actuality? If we look at the studies on progression to end-stage renal disease, we find that there's not a lot out there. The reason there's not a lot out there is our concern initially was that if we treated anemia in patients in chronic kidney disease, we would worsen the renal disease, that it would cause progressive renal insufficiency. And the theory there was that if the hemoglobin level was higher, it would alter renal hemodynamics and cause renal disease. Turns out it's not true. For certain, all the studies have shown that there is no worsening of renal function when you correct anemia. But to date, there's only been about 5 or 6 studies looking at the beneficial effects on therapy of anemia and progressive kidney disease, and I'd just like to show you 2 of them. In this study, retrospective study, they took patients and treated them with erythropoietin. And as you can see from the yellow curve, that patients treated with erythropoietin had an increase in their hemoglobin level from sub-9 up to about 11 or so, whereas patients with equivalent renal dysfunction who are not anemic, not treated with erythropoietin, over the course of a year, their hemoglobin levels dropped from 11 to almost 9. If we look at their renal function on the right side of the slide, we could see that patients treated with erythropoietin, the yellow line, had a slower progression of kidney disease, whereas the patients in the purple, that is not treated, had worsening of their kidney function. But a more recent, more sound study that was published in Kidney International over the summer looked at the impact of treating anemia in patients with chronic kidney disease prospectively. They took people who had hemoglobin levels of 9 to 11.6, and either they treated them immediately with erythropoietin, or they didn't treat them at all. And we could see, again in yellow, that patients who were treated with erythropoietin had a dramatic increase in hemoglobin level from 10 to the almost 13 range, whereas the patients who were not treated had no change in the hemoglobin level. Though both groups had some decrease in their kidney function, the decrease in the kidney function was much more dramatic in the patients not treated. Moreover, when they looked at their primary endpoint, which was doubling of serum creatinine or progression of end-stage renal disease, the patients who were not treated for their anemia had double the risk of progressing end-stage renal disease or having a doubling of creatinine level. So I think this study was probably the best study to date demonstrating that therapy of anemia retards the progression of chronic kidney disease. Well, that's nice too, but do patients do better? Now, there are a lot of studies that are looking at survival of patients who are treated for anemia while on dialysis, but there's much less studies in the pre-ERCD patients. This study I kind of like. It's a little bit complicated, but what they did was looked at the effect of treating patients with erythropoietin before the initiation of dialysis and then looked at their survival once they were on dialysis. So the question is, does treatment of anemia before you start dialysis impact your survival on dialysis? And it separated them up into several groups, those patients who received no erythropoietin at all, those patients who received erythropoietin 25% of the months prior to initiation dialysis, 25 to 50, et cetera, et cetera, the patients who received EPO 100% of the months prior to dialysis. And as you can see here, the bottom curve, the one on the bottom, the patients with the worst survival were the patients who did not receive any erythropoietin before the initiation of dialysis. So there is something here that therapy of anemia before the initiation of dialysis impacts survival. Well, why might that be? We come back to cardiovascular events once again. We know that anemia is associated with LVH. We know that anemia is associated with cardiovascular events. And in this study from 1999, we can see that for every 0.5 gram per deciliter decrease in hemoglobin level in pre-dialysis patients, there was a 32% increased risk of a cardiovascular event. So I think it all sort of comes together that anemia is worse for progressive kidney disease, that therapy improves it, that therapy of anemia improves outcomes, and that that outcome may be mediated by decreased cardiovascular events. Well, how should we treat anemia in the CKD patient? We all know about erythropoietin. The question is there any benefit to IV iron? What is the role for IV iron, and is it safe? Well, it turns out that many patients with chronic kidney disease, despite having reasonable iron in disease, that is what most hematologists would consider not iron deficiency, do have iron depletion in the bone marrow. And the reason is several-fold. Patients with chronic kidney disease have decreased all iron intake, they have decreased iron absorption, they have low-grade GI bleeds, and phosphate binders interfere with the absorption of iron. But what I think is more impressive is that about 30% of patients who are anemic with chronic kidney disease can attain hematocrit levels of 35% with therapy of iron only. And I'd like to show you just one study to that effect. On the left-hand side of the slide, you can see patients treated with IV iron sucrose and EPO. They received 2,000 units sub-Q weekly of EPO, as well as iron sucrose at a dose of 200 milligrams a week for 5 weeks. And you can see, as you would expect, they had a dramatic increase at the hemoglobin level from about 9.7 to 11. On the right-hand side are patients treated with IV iron only. They received 200 milligrams of IV sucrose weekly for 5 doses, and they had a dramatic increase in the hemoglobin level from 9.8 to 10.7. So there's clearly a role for iron therapy in patients with chronic kidney disease. If you're treating patients with erythropoietin, you may not get the response you want unless you give them IV iron. But equally important, a relatively cheap way of correcting anemia is to treat them with IV iron. Get a good response, and if you still need more, you can add erythropoietin to their regimen. Well, we can give IV iron sucrose to treat anemia. The question is it a safe and effective way of treating? So I'd like to review for you a study that looked at iron sucrose therapy in patients with chronic kidney disease. The background is simple. Patients who are anemic have some iron deficiency. And the hypothesis was that iron sucrose given at 200 milligram doses relatively rapidly in terms of sequence can improve hemoglobin levels and avoid any adverse events such as, avoid any adverse events that you might see with oral iron. The study protocol was quite simple. There were about 100 patients randomized into two groups. One group received ferrous sulfate at a dose of 325 milligrams three times a day. The other group received iron sucrose, 200 milligrams weekly for five doses, and then their labs were evaluated. Each group got erythropoietin at a dose of 2,000 units weekly. To be included in the study, you had to iron sats less than 25, ferritin levels less than 300, which is not a low level, less than 300, anemic with a hemoglobin level less than 10.5, and chronic kidney disease is evidenced by creatinine clearance less than 40. Patients with severe concurrent medical illnesses such as malignancy, chronic infection, et cetera, were excluded from the study. Iron sucrose was administered intravenously, either as a 200 milligram dose, undiluted, over 5 minutes without a test dose, without a test dose. If patients did not tolerate that, or if the investigator was uncomfortable with that regimen, they could receive 200 milligrams diluted and saline over a 30 to 60 minute period. What did we find? Well, first we found, as you all know, that patients are non-compliant with their oral iron therapy. Only about 35% or 40% of patients took all their iron pills. The majority did not, and there were a couple of wackos on the right side who took more iron than prescribed. And I can guarantee you they did not live in Philadelphia. If we look at adverse events, in the oral iron group, there were no deaths, there were no serious-related adverse events, and there were no withdrawals. In the iron sucrose group, there were no deaths, there were no serious-related adverse events, and the only withdrawal was to one minor non-serious-related event, which I believe was constipation or something like that. If we look at outcomes, and this outcome is a composite outcome, that is an increase in hemoglobin level of 0.8 with an increase in ferritin level of 160, we can see that the oral iron group were unable to increase their ferritin levels, but the IV iron sucrose group had increase in hemoglobin levels as well as increase in ferritin levels. To be fair, the oral iron group did have increase in the hemoglobin, but they were not able to restore their iron deficit by increasing their ferritin levels. So in summary, iron sucrose can be administered safely, 200 milligrams over 5 minutes. There were no serious events with either oral iron or IV iron, and non-serious GI effects were common after oral iron. If you look at some other safety studies with iron sucrose, almost 1,300 patients, almost 10,000 doses of 100 to 200 milligrams at a time, given at 20 to 50 milligrams per minute, no serious adverse reactions at all. What do you do with your patients who are intolerant of one iron product? We all know patients are intolerant of iron dextran or iron gluconate. What can you do with those patients? Well, as sub-analysis of the previous studies I showed you, they identified about 130 patients who were intolerant to either iron dextran, iron gluconate, or both. And they were treated with iron sucrose. And it turns out that there were no withdrawals, no serious adverse events, 8 minor non-serious reactions, as you can see, taste disturbance, nausea, low hypertension, etc. So all the iron products aren't the same. If a patient is intolerant to one product, they may benefit from another. If you have patients with chronic kidney disease who need IV iron, you have several options available to you. In summary, anemia is a significant risk factor for cardiovascular disease and progressive renal insufficiency. Therapy of anemia improves renal outcomes. Therapy of anemia and chronic kidney disease may improve outcomes in the end stage renal disease period. Therapy of anemia requires not just erythropoietin, but IV iron also. And you can administer IV iron in the form of IV sucrose in a very safe and effective manner. Thank you very much.